Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians, that's us, pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. And I'm Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Anna and Will.
Non-historian.
Non-historian too.
And this week, we're talking about the year 244-ish.
Spoiler alert.
Very-ish.
Well, as is custom, I'd like each of us to give our three-word preview. Anna, what is your three words?
Die, orcas, die.
Nice.
Orcas.
Orcas.
As in the whale.
Yes,
type thing.
In the whales, yeah.
Ah, cool.
Quite right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Phil?
Phil?
No, sorry, that's
you
my one.
You legitimately just called me Phil.
No, because, I just gave away my three words. Because I was looking at them right here. So I just...
Go on then, you do yours then.
No, Phil, I'd like to hear yours.
Fine, until genocide.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, mine is Phil the Emperor.
Okay, there we go. We're all quite... well, I guess Phil and I are a little violent today. I'm going to do that the whole episode.
Okay, so today the year is 244, and I am once again in Rome for I think the third time in a row.
Obsessed.
There are no Medicis here.
Oh.
They're but the twinkle in the eye of a young Roman at this stage.
Yeah.
But a lot is happening in Rome at this time, as it tends to always be happening in Rome. It's a large and sprawling empire, with emperors lasting not very long, people coming in and out. And there's this unstable peace with the Goths in the north beyond the Danube, with tributes being paid to keep them at bay. And there's a war in the east with the Sassanians and King Shapur the First, who we've covered before.
Oh, yeah, he's back. Well, he didn't go anywhere.
No, he's still here.
He comes back later.
He's back into the things we're thinking about.
He's back into our hearts and minds.
And on the throne in Rome is a child emperor called Gordian the Third, who came to power at the ripe old age of 13.
Oh, wow. Gordy.
So, as I said, Rome was at war with the Sassanians. We covered them previously, I believe. But it was in March of 244 that a counterattack from the Sassanians against the Romans caused the Romans to be defeated. And at that battle, Gordian was killed.
Oh.
So the emperor,
was he still a child at the time?
He was about 16, I think, at the time.
Okay.
You know,
still
he's,
sad.
He's pretty young.
Yeah.
It's unclear, though, if he was killed by his own army or in the battle itself.
Oh.
Yeah. There also could have been a plot to have him killed by the hero of this tale, Philip.
Okay.
So, who was this rising star? Philip, otherwise known as Marcus Julius Philippus, a.k.a. Philip the Arab in historical terms.
Philip the Arab.
Yes. So a bit about him. He was born in Syria, not far from Damascus, and likely to a fairly well-to-do family. And his brother, Gaius Julius Priscus, was a senior officer in the Praetorian Guard and was a high-flying official in the Gordian Third's empire.
Okay.
So there's some scholars that believe that Philip was a Christian due to his subsequent treatment of Christians. And then, you know, Constantine is widely regarded as the first Christian emperor. But some say that he could be Christian. He most likely was just a religion of the day. But he's kind of a nice dude towards Christians and his treatment towards them. There's a whole thread on that. But his brother, who was this Praetorian guard, gave him his first big political break when the Praetorian prefect, Timotheus, died under very unclear circumstances. Mm.
It's a lot of unclear, suspicious deaths.
I think, you know, some scholars think that this was all orchestrated to rise to power. Some say history is hard to understand and nobody knows what's going on. And it's unclear because there's no history there.
Some say people die from time to time.
But Gaius suggested to the child emperor that Philip would be a perfect for the job of the Praetorian prefect. And so he ascended and took the purple, as it were, which was the purple robes that they would wear if you're in a station of power.
Okay.
Because purple was a very royal, regal colour.
Yeah.
And the dye was made from an animal. What animal do you think the purple dye was made from?
Platypus.
Mm-hmm. Platypus. Will?
Beaver.
Beaver. It was actually a combination of the two. You got it both right.
Platypus.
No, you're wrong. It's sea snails.
No, it's not.
It is crushed sea snails, and you get a royal regal purple or dark red sometimes from it. It depends on the snail.
No, that's impossible because no one who's ever fought the sea snails has lived to tell the tale.
No, they always send one person back to say, tell of the glories you saw. Yeah, exactly.
You're the messenger.
Yeah.
Well, Philip and Gaius were effectively shadow rulers over Gordian, and this is why it's thought they might have plotted to have him killed, because they saw this as their chance to rise to power, because they were effectively controlling the empire. Regardless, if they did it or not, the death of Gordian did suit Philip, who declared himself co-emperor with his brother, and his first act was then to make peace with the Sassanians. So rather than continue this crazy war with them, he withdrew the army from a very, you know, a potentially disastrous campaign. But he had to give up Armenia to the Persians, and he had to pay a massive 500,000 denarii indemnity to them. So as a sort of a, you know, saws for the war type deal.
Yeah. Saws for the war.
Should have gotten
Here's some money and also Armenia.
Yeah, exactly.
I've made that deal several times.
Yeah, passing back Armenia all the time. He has to go back to Rome to be installed as emperor.
Installed
as emperor.
All right, carry on.
Yeah. Installed. Like, what would you say?
Crowned?
Emperor?
I like installed. I mean, we've talked about this before, about installing monks in
the Westminster Abbey. Yes.
Yeah.
God, you could install anything.
You can install anything.
They had to rip out the old drawers and install them in there.
They had to build a grown-up chair. Because Gordian.
He was a competent ruler for the most part-ish, sort of.
Wow, that was so many qualifications.
He befriended the Senate and put together a lot of work packages and stuff, and he started making his mark.
He ruled with median competence.
I mean, like, he's got the outset of competence, but one crippling downside is that he doesn't really understand money. Because he embarks on this massive building program on his hometown, renamed it Philippopolis.
He did not.
He did. Four P's in that word.
Philippopolis.
Philippopolis.
Okay.
Yep. Great. Tough one to say. Rolls off the tongue. And he builds lots of statues to himself and his family.
Well,
he deifies his father. Yeah, normally it's reserved for emperors, but he said,
dads.
Or dads. He also rang in 1,000 years of the Roman Empire from the founding of Romulus back in the day.
Wow.
With celebrations during the feast of the Ludi Secularis, which is like a 3-day sort of pagan ritual with several of the Roman cults there in presence. And he, you know, was able to do this massive party.
Ludi Secularis.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Lewd and secular. Not unlike Will.
Lewd and secular. He also had to pay a very hefty donativium. Do you know what a Donativium is?
I think she is the chief of Versace. Donativium Versace.
She is. You love Versace. Yeah. No, what this was is the sort of standard bribe. I mean, it wasn't a bribe.
Donativium is just like... just like a donation, right?
Yeah, just
like
donation. But it was a donation to the army for them to approve your rule.
Oh, okay. I was just like, who is he bribing? He's already bribed the Persians.
It was just standard. You come to rule, you pay the army this donativium.
Okay.
And the thing in Latin makes it sound official, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's literally a bribe.
Yeah. It was definitely a bribe.
Or like a paycheck.
Yeah. No, but they already get a paycheck. But okay, on the turnover, they also give him extra money.
Nice.
And to secure his title. Unfortunately, the money really wasn't adding up on the right side of the ledger. The cost of the payments of the Sassanians, the bribes, the building of his stupid city. And he had then ruthlessly increased tax and cut back on subsidies to the tribes north of the Danube. So this left him with a very shaky northern border, insecure finances, and rich people that didn't quite like him in the own city. So he was not building allies on his flanks or in the centre. He eventually then had to lead a campaign in the north against invaders crossing the Danube, which he won. So he actually won handily with his army, and he took the title of Carpicus Maximus.
Oh yeah,
biggest complainer,
biggest massive carp,
big fish,
big fish.
He's big fish in the north.
Yeah.
But as he was out there campaigning with this war, the Sassanians were stirring up again because the Armenians wouldn't recognise King Shapur. Okay. So Armenia, which was fairly traded...
But he gave Armenia away.
He gave him away.
A whole country. Just deal with it.
So now at this stage, there were so many people now at the border. A bit of confusion on who was in power, who wasn't in power. Various peoples raiding and usurpers from within. That Philip actually offered to resign to the Senate.
Oh,
wow.
That's quite mature.
Yeah, he's really mature.
Usually you just wait to get stabbed.
Well, the Senate didn't let him because they probably wanted him to hang around long enough till he got stabbed.
Oh.
But they backed him really, you know, vociferously. Yeah, they really backed him.
Wow, and why? So on what grounds?
I don't, no idea, but they did. Just they really liked him.
Okay.
And so, you know, this renewed sense of confidence, he decided to dispatch Decius, a general of his, to quell the North revolts and sent him up there. And it worked. So Decius went up there, remounted the armies out there, settled the whole region, quelled the barbarians, the Goths, whatever it is, coming over the borders. Decius then proclaimed himself emperor. So he sort of got a taste for power and the good life up in the Danube and said, I want to get this for me back home.
Yeah.
And he then let it get to his head. And
you dip your toe in the Danube and then all you can think about is sea snails.
Yeah. So he marched back on Rome. So now the money problems were getting worse. There was rioting in Egypt prior to this, meant the wheat supply was denuded, and this completely cut the legs from underneath Philip. So he had no resupply, finances were poor, warring factions on the borders, and an usurper coming for him.
It's an untenable position.
It's not really good. And so Decius tried to parley, but Philip was having none of it, met him in battle, but was handily defeated. So Decius took control, and he died in September 2049, most likely by his own men. Philip was killed by his own men, most likely. And it's also probably true that his young son at the time was killed. His father and his brother, however, had disappeared without a trace, just slipped into the ether.
Well, his father's a god, so he probably just went on up to heaven.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, true. And that ended the reign of Philip.
That's logical.
That's history.
And that is Philip the Arab. That ended his reign.
Okay.
After coming to power, it didn't last too long. Decius didn't last much longer, by the way. Just spoiler alert. He only lasted 2 years and then was killed by Goths.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. Well, wow, Philip. What a massive carp.
Philip, big fish, small pond.
Briefly.
Briefly, yes. All right, well, I am talking about not Rome. I've decided to...
Is there anyone else?
Yeah. Oh, I've decided to look east, even past the Persians, and I'm in Vietnam.
Oh, nice.
Talking about the very interesting, though very little known, lady warrior named Lady True. And right off the bat, I want to say, yes, that is the name of a character in Watchmen. I haven't seen the show, so I don't know if she's at all connected, but I think she probably is, given what that show is about. So this is an historical person. And I did have to, let's say, bend the rules a bit.
Okay, this is where the ish comes in.
She was alive in 244.
Okay, great. Okay. Good enough for me.
That's good enough.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, real good.
The good stuff she did was not in 244.
That's fine.
That's fine.
I think we can, these years, you can have some leeway, like, you know, 1,000 years left or right, who cares?
You know, whatever. Also, this is...
Even by that rule, you didn't adhere to that. 1,053 years out, a few episodes ago.
Yeah, so who's going to begrudge me a few dozen months at this point? So our story today takes place in the first pronunciation that I'm going to get horribly wrong. Don't worry, there are many more after this. Takes place in Jiaozhou, which at this time is an imperial Chinese province under the Han Empire, but is part of modern day Vietnam, the northern part of Vietnam. And the ruler of Jiaozhou is a man named Xu Zhi. And the Han Empire is crumbling, but since Jiaozhou is fairly remote, it doesn't really get caught up in the chaos. And Xu Zhi is able to rule effectively as an autonomous warlord over the province, even though he's technically still a subject of the Han. But because of this relative autonomy, this is also the beginning of a divergent Vietnamese identity. And some historians have called Xu Zhi the first Vietnamese. Unfortunately for this nascent movement, the Han Empire fully crumbles in 220 and is succeeded by something called the Three Kingdoms period. And one of the kingdoms is Wu, or Eastern Wu. And Eastern Wu is ruled by a man named Sun Quan, who is not as tolerant of the semi-autonomy in Vietnam, and he sets his sights on Xu Zhi.
He wanted to give them full autonomy?
He was like, you know what? You guys are doing great work over there. You're free! Or the opposite of
that. Probably the opposite.
Yeah, in 226, it starts to really go south for Xu Zhi in that he dies.
It's as south as you get.
6 feet under south. He dies not in battle or anything. He's just quite old. I think he was 89 maybe. But because of this power vacuum, Sun Quan comes to the territory and kills Xu Zhi's son and brings the whole province under the rule of the Eastern Wu. But 226 is also the year in which today's heroine is born. Her actual given name is unknown, but she's called Tru Thi Trinh, or usually just Lady Tru. Her parents died when she was young, and she was raised by her brother and his cruel wife. And as I've mentioned, in 244, Lady Tru is alive and well and doing things. Tick!
Is that it? Is that the only thing that she's done in 244 is just be alive?
Well, okay, there's, first of all, not a whole lot written about her, so I don't know, like, what she was doing as a, what would she have been then, like, 16-year-old, 18-year-old. She was probably, she was learning to vote and smoking her first cigarette. Let's say that. In 246, she kills her cruel sister-in-law and flees to the mountains, possibly accompanied by her brother. And at this point, the Eastern Wu have
Hang on, let's just break that down as a dynamic.
I was wondering.
So she's killed this guy's wife.
His cruel wife.
Fine.
Yeah.
But his wife.
Yes.
Who had helped raise her. And we're sort of 50-50 on whether he then went with her.
Yeah. It's possible that...
Is there like a thing?
Maybe he didn't like his wife.
Yeah.
Maybe they conspired to kill her. Or maybe she just went nuts. And then he's like,
maybe
it
just didn't happen.
Maybe it didn't happen. Honestly, maybe none of this happened. Yeah. Maybe I'm making all of it up.
Yeah.
But at this point, the Eastern Wu have sent generals to the province to, quote, exterminate and pacify the barbarous tribes.
Yeah, peaceful envoy.
just a little diplomacy. Lady Tru decides to do something about it. In the mountains, she gathers a...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Band of 1,000 followers, and when her brother tries to persuade her not to rebel, she responds, "I'd like to ride storms, kill orcas in the open sea, drive out the aggressors, reconquer the country, undo the ties of serfdom, and never bend my back to be the concubine of whatever man. Why should I imitate others, bow my head, stoop over, and be a slave? Why resign myself to menial housework?" It's pretty good. I don't really know why she brings orcas into it. Like, she's quite far from the ocean.
Yeah, but she wants to slay them or ride them. Which
slay
was
them. Slay she them. Wants to kill them. And they're quite majestic beasts, I would say. Though.
But that's a pretty good quote. I mean,
it's a pretty good quote. Yeah. And in fact, it's so good that it inspires her brother to join her fight. And he stops carping about how how she shouldn't do this. And maybe she shouldn't have murdered his wife and all that sort of stuff. It all gets a little complicated because she's not mentioned in contemporaneous Chinese sources, but is described in later Vietnamese sources. But basically, in 248, she assembled the people along with her band of mountain rebels and attacks the Chinese in several places. She robs the Chinese. She fights them. She just generally causes havoc. And she's apparently made the leader of the rebellion because of her bravery. And these later Vietnamese sources include some really great descriptions of her, several of which I will read right now. Number one, when she went to battle, she wore gilded coarse tunics and toothed footwear.
Sorry, toothed?
Toothed. Toothed? Toothed.
Like, is it like at the bottom of her
teeth? Oh, now I understand.
Yeah. I guess like cleats or...
Oh, as in like it had like...
Like teeth. Grips.
Okay.
Maybe. That's what I assumed. Okay. Maybe it just means...
Like crampons.
Her shoes had a smile.
Shoes with a decent grip on them.
Shoes with a decent grip.
Right.
Which is great for battle, I think. You don't want to slip.
Was that not common?
Well...
People slipped the whole time, I guess.
Yeah.
Why such coarse tunics?
Well, they're coarse and yet also gilded, which I think is an interesting way of saying you're with the people, but also the leader of the people.
Yeah, true.
Oh, I see.
You've got a golden potato sack tied around your waist.
Golden potato sack is exactly the direct translation, I think. These descriptions, by the way, go from progressively more boring to more interesting. So number two, she had a voice like a temple bell and a beauty that could shake any man's soul.
Bong. So you just talk to her, she'd be like, bong.
So beautiful.
Yeah, maybe her beauty was shaking the man's soul because she was vibrating them with her temple bell voice. Number three, she could eat many rice pecks and walk 500 leagues per day.
That's a lot of leagues and a lot
of
rice.
It's a lot of leagues. It's a lot of rice.
How much? What's the distance in a single league?
500 leagues is...
About 300 miles?
It is...
No, in a day?
Yeah.
500 nautical leagues are 2778 kilometers.
Okay, that kind of makes sense.
Wait, 27...
almost 3,000 kilometers.
Sorry, 3,000 kilometers?
Yeah. Sorry, I just said that number really weirdly. 2,778 kilometers is 500 leagues.
That's not a thing that's true.
I mean, no wonder she ate so much rice. She had to fuel up.
she
really had to carbo load.
Much is in a peck of rice?
One peck of rice.
It's like four gigatons
equals,
or something.
It equals 8,809 milliliters, which I think is the...
So that's like probably like 9 kilos of rice.
Yeah.
How many was eight, was it?
It was...
How many pecks?
How many pecks?
Many
she could
pecks.
Eat many.
Many. What? Yeah. So more than so basically we're saying at least 18 kilos of rice. Yeah. And she can travel 3,000 kilometers a day.
Yeah. Well,
admirable.
Now, yeah, she could walk 500 leagues per day.
Is this the same source that's giving you all the rest of the information in this I mean, like, bit?
Could she walk 500 more just to be the
woman
that ate rice pecks at your door?
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
Careful, copyright.
No, that was just me screaming. Number four, she rode a war elephant into battle.
No, well,
now I don't know what to believe. Yeah. I mean, maybe.
She walk?
Now, actually, I should have done number five next because this could possibly explain how she can walk 500 leagues per day. She was 9 feet tall.
But like, so that means she's on the elephant and her legs were just dragging along the floor.
Yeah. And that's not the only thing that's dragging, because in multiple sources, she was described as having 3 foot long breasts that she would tie behind her back when she charged into battle.
I have never heard breasts described in units of length before.
They were a yard
of
long.
Of everything we've covered, this is the most dubious history.
She would tie them behind, like to each other, like in a bow. Yeah.
I'm not an expert on these sorts of things, but that doesn't sound incredible.
Listen, I can't believe that you're shocked that a description of a fairly inconsequential woman in the year 244 isn't
flattering.
Yeah, well, fully sourced and documented. Oh. But these are the facts as reported to me.
Well, fair enough.
So
fascinating to hear about Vietnam at this point.
it if you can believe it, it gets even hazier after this. But
impossible, completely impossible.
Essentially, after several months of warfare, her rebellion is defeated, in fact, quite easily, and she runs away and commits suicide. Historians think that because the Chinese didn't even write about her in their histories, it shows that her rebellion was simply a, quote, kind of stubborn barbarism that was wiped out as a matter of course. But the fact remains that she's become a folk hero in Vietnam, which I think shows that her story appeals to these kind of populist interests, and her legend was handed down over generations as the concept of Vietnam or a Vietnamese identity grows. And she's still celebrated in Vietnam today with statues. She has streets
sports
named
bras.
After her. She has really heavy duty sports bras, all that good stuff.
Okay, so she's like as legit as Sir Lancelot and King Arthur.
I think she's more legit than that. Like,
you think she's a real historical figure?
I think she's a real historical figure.
Obviously with lots of like embellishments
and
stuff.
Yes, yeah, okay, exactly. Okay. I'm not sure that, I think pretty much everyone agrees that she did exist. It's just, of course, you know, what of those descriptions,
whether she was like
accurate.
9 foot or 8 foot 5.
Yeah,
or,
right. She probably rounded up.
Yeah, you know,
she probably
did.
A clean 9.
On her dating profile.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Swipe right. Yeah, so that's the story of Lady True, about whom everything I've said is true.
And
oh, that was not an intentional pun.
That's great.
And thanks.
We should get an AI to design us an image of what she would look like. And then we should place in a dating profile all the facts we think we know about her. And see how successful that dating profile is.
Yeah, that sounds really like a really good thing to do. And we can then talk about it and they release those as bonus episodes on the Patreon.
I mean, I stopped listening when you said the only thing that happened in 244 was that she was 16. Yeah. And everything else was just in a different year, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Fact, maybe that should just be a podcast of its own. There you go. Spin-off, our first spin-off.
Okay, great.
Okay, so this week I'm going to talk about the Roman Emperor Diocletian. I'm sorry, Rome. I'm adding
amazing.
To the Rome.
Wow. I love it.
How long were his breasts?
We'll come on to that. Diocletian was born in 244. Tick.
Yay.
Probably. And maybe there's actually a bracketing thing going on there, but yeah. But for the purposes of
close
this.
Close enough.
And he ruled from 284 until his abdication in 305.
That's very unusual.
He was born Gaius Valerius Diocles to a low status family in the Roman province of Dalmatia, which now encompasses where?
Czech Republic? Czechia?
Nope.
Croatia.
Yes. Yes.
There
Croatia.
It is.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Croatia and actually quite significant parts of the like, surrounding
coast.
Bits. Yeah, but it's much larger than that in antiquity. And Diocles rose through the ranks of the military in his early career, eventually becoming a cavalry commander in the army of Emperor Carus.
Mm-hmm.
And after the deaths of Carus and his son Numerian on a campaign in Persia,
mm-hmm.
Diocles was then proclaimed emperor by the troops.
Oh. Yay.
Which was seemingly happening quite a lot
all
at that
the time.
Period
yeah.
of time.
It really was.
Man, the troops.
They just did what they wanted.
They were
didn't
incredibly
they?
Powerful.
Just be popular with the troops.
Yeah.
Promise them riches. And anyway, so the title was also claimed by Carus's surviving son, Carinus, but Diocletian then defeated him quite quickly in battle, at the Battle of Margus. So that was all done. And he then had his reign, which stabilized the empire and ended the crisis of the third century,
wow.
which we were just talking about.
Amazing.
And he was later he later appointed a fellow officer, Maximian, as Augustus, which at the time meant the Augustus was the co-emperor.
Huh.
In 286. So they split things up between them, with Diocletian took over the Eastern Empire,
mm-hmm.
which centered on the place that wasn't yet called Constantinople, but was going to be called
yes.
Constantinople. And Maximian reigning in the Western Empire centered on Rome. And then he further delegated again in 293. So he appointed two other people as co-emperors, mm-hmm. junior to the other two. So
God, that's a real hierarchy.
Yeah. So not a hierarchy, in fact, so much as a tetrarchy.
Uh-huh.
And this yes. tetrarchy, the period known as the tetrarchy, the rule of four, then it was established in which each emperor ruled over a quarter division of the empire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then Diocletian, throughout his reign, spent a lot of time trying to secure the empire's borders. So he made a huge effort to fight off anyone who was threatening his power, including a successful campaign against the Sassanids.
Yay.
Who are the common constant enemy yep. during this period. And he sacked their capital in 299 and then led a bunch of negotiations, which basically imposed peace for mm-hmm. quite a while.
Yeah.
So, he nailed this whole Sassanid problem.
Was he focused on expanding the borders of just his quarter, or was he looking out for the whole borders?
No, I think he was the Uber emperor.
The Uber, yeah. Okay. Yeah. yeah.
I think
yeah.
this is kind of the start as well of this separation of Eastern and Western Roman empires, right?
Yeah,
and
it started very yeah. swiftly after this.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Exactly. And all was going fine, really, and history would probably smile on Diocletian, except that
uh-oh.
In 303...
Wait, can we guess?
Killed an orca.
That's Ant's guess. When your guess, Anna?
Sea snail massacre.
Sea snail massacre are the two guesses. No, incorrect. He began the bloodiest ever persecution of Christians.
Oh, no.
Called the Diocletianic persecution.
Okay. I knew there was... I've heard his name before... And I don't know much about Rome, so if I know someone's name, it's because they did something bad.
Yeah, it's not for whimsy reasons.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, I mean, the main reason people know about him now, I think, in the West is because the Christians then wrote about him a lot.
Yeah.
yeah okay.
So in 303, those four emperors issued a series of edicts rescinding Christians' legal rights and demanding that they comply with traditional religious practices. And later on, some edicts targeted the clergy and demanded universal sacrifice, ordering all inhabitants to sacrifice to the gods.
Oh, including that other emperor's dad?
I guess so. I guess he's in the pantheon now.
Yeah.
They would have to sacrifice themselves or offer sacrifice?
Offer sacrifice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was I think the offering of sacrifice had been, a staple of Roman religious worship for a thousand more years.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons they were annoyed with the Christians is they rejected these very traditional things.
Yeah.
And just had a totally different view of everything. And the persecution, it varied in intensity quite a bit. So it was actually at its weakest in Gaul and in Britain, which was a very liberal place at the time. And it was at its strongest in the eastern provinces where he had more power, Diocletian had more power. And the Christians had been subject to intermittent local discrimination throughout the whole empire. But emperors prior to Diocletian were reluctant to issue general laws.
Yeah.
Just... encouraging people to persecute them outright. So in the first 15 years of his rule, he had purged the whole army of Christians and had surrounded himself with public opponents of Christianity. And he had a preference for activist government and wanted to foster an image as a guy who was going to restore Rome to its former greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And all this foreboded the biggest persecution in Roman history. And for the Romans, that's...
That's really bad. Saying something.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Like, they're pretty persecuted. So by in the winter of 302, so right towards the end of his reign, he'd begun this general persecution of the Christians. And he was at first, he was wary of what to do. So he went to the oracle to ask for some guidance.
Yep.
And the oracle then very conveniently endorsed the whole thing.
Kill Christians.
And was like totally up for it. So it began the following year.
Wow.
And some historians consider that in the centuries that followed the persecutory era, that the Christians created this cult of martyrs that exaggerated the barbarity of the whole thing. But that is contested. So there are other historians who say that it's the evidence justified. Points to the fact it was genuinely as
everything
bad as they said.
Everything that happened. Yeah.
But there's some contestation around how much it was.
I mean, if you do read about any of the saints and stuff from this time, the martyrs, it's absolutely insane what the writings are saying has happened to them.
How
they're
killed and
completely barbaric.
Stuff.
Yeah. And even if it's 10% true, it's still a bit OTT.
Yeah. And I think it all played...
That's a good way of putting it.
And it all played to this, there was a lot of obsession with the way in which you're dying in early Christianity, right? Because for obvious reasons, because that's the main thing. So it obviously all played up to that. But there's significant evidence to say it was genuinely as bad as they were saying. So despite these snags, Diocletian's societal reforms more broadly, fundamentally changed the structure of Roman society and government, and they helped to stabilize the empire in what had in his youth had been a really
turbulent
extremely turbulent period in which the empire was going to completely collapse probably in the next few decades, and he managed to stabilize all that despite being clearly a genocidal monster in the other half of his life. And later on, interestingly, he got pretty ill, so he left office in 305 and thus becoming the first Roman empire the first Roman emperor to abdicate the position voluntarily. And he lived out his retirement in a palace on the Dalmatian coast, tending to his vegetable gardens.
Oh, that sounds
very lovely.
And his palace eventually became the core of modern-day Split in Croatia.
Okay. Oh, really? That's very cool.
So there you are. He knew when to call it quits, not like your dude.
Exactly. Yeah. Just most abdications up to then have been very stabby.
Sort of involuntary abdication.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes when the vegetables call, you have to answer.
There you go, Emperor Diocletian. Fine until the genocide.
Well, thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever, ever need to know about the year 244.
Ish. And that means it's time for us to choose the next one. So, Will, can you please boot up the random number generator?
I absolutely can, and I'm just...
Do you have enough dilithium crystals for it this week?
Pouring in the dilithium crystals.
There was an Amazon delivery earlier. I think that may have been some more crystals.
Oh, dear. In retrospect, I now feel bad having to use 3 tons of carp and orca in its place to fuel the machine.
That's what that smell is.
And the next year is... 1732.
God, there's going to be so much factual history in that one.
French.
People will be able to check our facts.
People will be able to check our facts. Probably no one will be 9 feet tall. But that's exciting, though. 1732.
Yeah, we've done, we did 1795.
We did 1795.
Have we done another 1700?
No. Well, in the last episode, 1789. Okay,
So this is our second 1700s, 18th century.
That's right.
Great.
Cool. That's great. Okay, cool. Looking forward to it.
See you next week.
Toodles.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.